Our culture is changing, and many of us are waiting longer to become parents. But sometimes, when we decide it's time, nature has other plans. This hour, older parents. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tom Lamar became a dad when he was 48 years old. Now, parenting an infant is challenging at any age. At 48, it brings with it a unique host of challenges. Lamar has written about his journey to fatherhood in the book Geezer Dad. I'll talk with him, and Thomas Schofield, assistant professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University, will be here. We also want to hear from you. Are you an older parent? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The average age of a woman who becomes a mother for the first time in the United States has been growing steadily. In 1970, the average age of a new mom was 21.4 years. In 2014, it was 26.3. There are a lot of forces driving this trend, but one of them is simply that people are choosing to wait longer to become parents. And sometimes when we decide that we are ready, Mother Nature has other plans. This hour, we're going to talk about older parents, and we would love to hear about your experiences this hour. If you are an older parent, perhaps you were a younger parent and an older parent. We'd love to hear your stories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My first guest today is Tom Lamar. He became a dad when he was 48 years old, and he has written about his journey to fatherhood in the book Geezer Dad, How I Survived Infertility Clinics, Fatherhood Jitters, Adoption Weight Limbo, and Things That Go Wah in the Night. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
And let's go to this sort of the beginning of this journey toward parenthood. Tell me a little bit about the situation you and your wife were in.
Well, we had waited, but we had not waited extremely long when we decided we would try to become parents and had an easy start where we were pregnant right away. And unfortunately, that turned into a miscarriage. But things seemed hopeful, seemed like, well, we can do this. We can have children like everyone else. And that turned out to not be so easy, and we ended up trying a number of things on our path to becoming parents. And ultimately, we ended up choosing adoption, which provided a very happy ending to the story.
Absolutely. Well, and you and your wife did a lot of research, and you did explore a lot of options. Tell me about some of the different paths that you explored. I mean, and first with seeking help with fertility.
Well, it probably didn't seem funny at the time to me, but the funniest chapter in the book probably has to deal with infertility clinics and the embarrassing things you will do there for the sake of starting a family. And the odds never seemed that good to me, but I was constantly told that, oh, no, this will work. The statistics are in your favor, and that turned out not to be the case. And we debated and debated whether to go to the next step, which is IVF, which is a pretty serious commitment. And the odds for that working have improved since we were there. But at the time, it just did not sound very promising to me. And we had friends who had adopted, and they seemed quite happy. And adoption just seemed the sure route to me. And that ultimately, we both ended up agreeing on that. But we looked at everything, and as you learn from reading the book, I typically overthought everything.
Well, I think a lot of people do, you know, and you, it's interesting to read about this from the perspective of the prospective father, because I think fertility is something that we talk about a lot from a woman's perspective quite often. And here you were in many ways. I mean, obviously you're a full partner in being a parent, mm-hmm. but then also in some ways along for the ride, because your body is not the one that's going
Correct.
To have to go through all of the treatments and the changes.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I wrote this book really was because we were buying books and friends were giving us books all the time. And some of them were quite helpful, but none of them were about me. And I thought, I know I was meeting other people just like me. And I thought, there's a place for a book for, that offers some encouragement, some reassurance, and a little bit of information to people following these same paths and would like to know they're not alone.
Well, and it's interesting to me because you write about what you were thinking, what you were wanting, but it also struck me that, you know, you and your wife were negotiating to try to figure out what path to take. But again, in many ways, you had a hard time making your case because, again, it was her body.
Yes, very true, very true.
Did you talk to other possible or prospective dads at the same time? Did you ever have a sort of a meeting of minds about, you know, what can I do? What can I say?
Well, it is true that actually because of some of the support groups we went to, we were meeting other parents all the time. And I did meet other dads who were having very similar problems. And I met people who were more open-minded than me and quite a few who were less open-minded than I was to the various possibilities. And all the choices are difficult. There's no denying that. And a big component here is that my wife always wanted to have an infant, which ruled out some of the adoption choices, for example. But a lot of discussion, a lot of compromise, and I did get some support from other men. And it's just like adopting. There are so many people in situations similar to this who never talk about it until you're there too. And then you're amazed at how many other people are in a similar situation facing the same challenges. So I did find support, yes.
Well, and the constant pressure of time seemed to be a factor as well. I mean, one of the first things that happened was that after your wife's miscarriage, the doctor suggested that you guys take 3 months off from trying and use contraception. And then after you did that, other doctors were like, what?
and we were like, what? Because that never really was explained to us. And the doctor admitted that may not have been the best choice at the time. But and it's funny, too, the more education we received, the more we learned, the more valuable that time seemed to be, where it does get much more difficult. And again, from everything I've read, there have been serious advances in infertility treatment, but it was definitely iffy when we were there, and it worked better for people who were younger.
Well, and so many people were throwing so much information at you. How did you work at filtering that out? Because everybody was saying different things and giving you different options, and of course, everything had a major price tag on it.
Correct. And some of the solutions involved just a more visceral solution, where just seeing other people, again, seeing our friends adopt and live happily ever after had a much bigger influence, I think, than all the statistics in the world. And so a lot of it was experience and observation.
Now, you joined a support group.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide to do that? Do you remember, was there a conversation that you and your wife had that made you think, we can't just have these conversations in an echo chamber?
Suddenly my memory is not helping me, because I remember the conversation, but I do not remember. It was my wife had heard about it, and I'm not sure if it was from a friend or just from reading, but it turned out to be a very good choice and very helpful to us.
Well, and I'm curious. You write about these meetings in great detail. When you were going through this process, was there a part of your writer brain that was saying, this material is too good to waste?
Yes, and I have a definite writing addiction, and it just occurred to me that, geez, something interesting is actually happening to me that's not fiction, and I should probably write it down.
So were you keeping a journal along the way?
No, I wasn't, but I wrote a fair amount of this probably about the time I was a new father and I was in a sleep-deprived mode. So it was all fairly fresh.
The support group that you went to, there were a lot of opportunities to learn from other couples, talk to other couples, and learn about some of these many options, because you were looking at not only fertility treatments and in vitro fertilization, but then when it comes to adoption, there are so many different pathways you can take. So you heard from the the group that facilitates Catholic adoptions. Mm-hmm. You had friends who had done international adoption. Mm-hmm. And at one of the meetings, there was a family that came and spoke that was talking about open adoption, and not just open adoption where you meet the biological mother of your child and have a, you know, an ongoing sort of updating process. But tell me about this family's open adoption arrangement.
Well, this was an arrangement where the birth mother and her family stayed very involved with raising the child. And obviously my reactions are, there's some humor in there, but
right.
my honest opinion is, to each his own, that adoption is a great thing, and they actually seem very happy. But the mantra of my book is, be honest with yourself. We were told that early, you know, as far as what you want and what you can handle. And I was sitting there thinking, I cannot handle this. But I don't want to discourage someone else from doing that, because we're all different. And it, like I said, the important thing is you have a family and a wonderful child. And like I said, they all seem quite happy, and that's great.
But you were terrified by the
idea. I was terrified. It seemed like she had a say in where they would go on vacation. And I thought that, well, I think there's a line in the book to the effect of, we all have enough family to begin with without adding more. So
as you explored the different options, I got the impression that you are the kind of guy who likes to really take your time and think things out. But again, yes. There was this time pressure constantly,
yes,
because
yes.
You were getting older every minute.
Well, I've been telling myself the rest of the world underthinks everything. But and again, the repercussions are quite serious. With the situation we were just describing, obviously I could agree to that and speed up the process. The rest of your life and that child's life are affected by that. So these were all important decisions. I definitely tend to give them very careful consideration, and time was running out. And also we had some disagreements. The same was true for my wife, that we had to find the right solution that worked for both of us.
Did you feel pressure to just say, you know, whatever you want to do is what I want to do?
Well, yes. And a few times, I think we both probably agreed to things that, in fact, that's in the book, that one of us wasn't comfortable with. But sometimes you just have to trust your partner that, you know, they've been right a lot of times when I haven't, and this could work. And in the end, we were both very much in agreement. In fact, providing a better answer to a question you asked earlier, too, on other people influencing our decision, this is in the book as well. The support groups we were going to provided plenty of examples of things we did not want to do, and got to see other people make choices that just did not look correct for us.
Right.
And that was a big factor.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Tom Lamar. He's the author of Geezer Dad, How I Survived Infertility Clinics, Fatherhood Jitters, Adoption Weight Limbo, and Things That Go Wah in the Night. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. We'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about older parents, and we'd love to hear your stories. Are you someone who waited a while to become a parent? We'd love to hear about your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Of course, a lot of people become parents young and then become parents again. Older, we'd love to hear you compare and contrast the experience of having an infant in your 20s and an infant in your 40s. Share your stories. 866-780-9100. With me is Tom Lamar. He calls himself Geezer Dad. He's written the book Geezer Dad, How I Survived Infertility Clinics, Fatherhood Jitters, Adoption Weight Limbo, and Things That Go Wah in the Night. And just before the break, Tom, you were talking about how going to this support group and learning about possible paths to parenthood, but also hearing from other parents, really helped you clarify what you wanted to do. And one of the things that you experienced was really just watching other couples talk about the decisions that they were making. And for example, there was one couple, and we're not going to say anybody's making a bad decision here, but there was one couple that had tried in vitro fertilization. They were at about the same place you were. In vitro fertilization had not worked for them. And then they were pursuing surrogacy. And you sort of had this moment of clarity where you were listening to the prospective father talking about his reasons and just decided, wait, I don't want to be like him. Can you tell me about that?
Well, yes, this person, this man, who was a very, very affable, likable person, thought he could not love someone who was not his own genetic child. And it just seemed odd where, first of all, the surrogacy is what it would not be his wife's genetic child, just his. And he had a relative with a bad experience with adoption. And I just thought, genetics aren't the important thing here. And my wife was starting to agree with that at that point, too. But it just seemed like the kid is the important thing here, and the family is the important thing. And it just seemed like a very extreme choice to us. And again, that works for a lot of people, and I hope it worked for them too. I never did meet them again, and I hope they're very happy. But it just seemed more extreme than we needed to do. That we knew at that point that adoption would work for us, and we would be a happy family.
And right. And just hearing somebody else voice an opinion and say what he said was, I don't feel that I could love a child that is not my genetic offspring. That brought you this sort of thunderbolt of, oh, wait, that's not me.
Right. And that was him. I mean, that, as I said, was a very self-fulfilling prophecy where I think that would have been true for them. And I think they were taking the correct path. But yeah, it definitely let me see myself and think, no, that I don't agree with that at all. That does not apply to me. So things like that were very helpful to us, getting to contrast and compare our lives to other people's choices and lives.
Part of the adoption process, and we'll talk more about that as we go on, but here you are, you really want a child, and you want to say yes to a child. You want someone to say yes, I want my child that I've just given birth to be part of this person's family. But at the same time, you are going through a process where you have to say no to a lot of possibilities. Mm-hmm. You explored the idea of foster care. As you said, your wife really, really wanted to have an infant. And with foster care, that's problematic. It's hard to have an infant because so many people want them. But you also, when you're filling out these forms, they ask you, what kind of challenges are you willing to deal with? Mm-hmm. And you have to say, you know, yes, I can handle this. No, I can't handle that. That seems really like there would be a lot of cognitive dissonance where you're saying, I want a child so badly, but no, mm-hmm. I don't want a child like that. Was that difficult for you?
It was difficult. And I think we were, to our credit, we were very honest with ourselves and stood firm thinking. And we were very open to most possibilities, too. I mean, we were not that difficult to please, but being dishonest with yourself has huge consequences for you and I think more so for the child. And I could interject a serious anecdote here that's not in the book, but there's terrible things like incest and rape involved, you know, with adoption. And, of course, the law allows your child to learn everything there is to know when your child becomes 16. And I'm pretty sure we met a couple that had said they were open to that and then they were not, and they just seemed as nervous as they could be once the adoption was complete. And it was just a sad, complicated situation, but I thought, I'm not sure they were the right parents for this child, and this child definitely deserved a good family. But it just seemed like, I'm sure it was the waiting and the, you know, the desperation that creeps in for everybody that may have caused that couple to not be honest in that particular case. And you need to be able to handle that. You need to be the right person to deal with that as life goes on.
Yeah,
I had one very serious example of that that I witnessed.
The point at which you said, yes, we want to adopt, to the time when your daughter came home with you, how long was that?
We expected a 2-year wait, and as it turned out, it was about a year and 5 months. It went much faster than we thought. And something everyone considering adoption should know is it drags by forever. The wait seems endless, And then things happen very quickly. It's a whirlwind at the end. And it's a good whirlwind.
But, right, right. But
gonna,
you
you're
go.
Not gonna sleep, you're not going to sleep once you have the child, so you get some practice at that before you actually meet your child.
Well, and with pregnancy, there's a gestational period. You kind of know when the child is coming. And with adoption, at least in your case, it was a big surprise.
Yeah, and I think the surprise is fairly common that, you know, it's a wonderful surprise, but it's very short notice.
I want to go to the phones now to hear some experiences from some other people. This is Tom Lamar with me. He's the author of Geezer Dad, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. PJ is on the line in Waverly. Hello, PJ.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And you have some experience from the other side.
The other side, yes. My mother was 45 when I was born. I was the unexpected change of life baby. And though I had older siblings, there were issues. I think a big part of it was back then it was unusual. And people were often making the mistake that she was my mother or my grandmother and saying so. And I think that kept my mother from becoming more involved with other parents. But it also meant that I socialized more with older people and not very much with the parents and families of kids my age.
Oh, interesting. PJ, thank you so much for sharing that perspective. And Tom, I know that was one of your worries.
That was one of my concerns, and I think it proved untrue, where your caller just mentioned that things may have been different then, and I think they were, where I go to my daughter's school and I don't feel so old. And of course, we also intermingle with the other families, but I'm not the oldest dad at my school. It always amazes me. So I think that there's been a huge shift. I mean, families have just changed in so many ways, and that's all good with me.
Yeah, well, but you did spend some time worrying about that. You're not a lot older than your wife, but you're a little older than your wife. So it was something that I think you worried about even more than she did.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I would see examples again in real life that did scare me a little bit, thinking, is that going to be me? But I hear the cliche all the time about your daughter's keeping you young, and in some ways that is so true. I am obligated to be younger, and but again, the society is changing. I look around and I am definitely not alone, and I don't think my daughter thinks it's that strange either. She definitely knows we're older parents.
You know, I think about though how at school, when my kids are at school, I do tend to gravitate toward the parents that look like me. And I have a number of friends. We all had our first baby when we were 30 years old. So I think that birds of a feather do tend to flock together. Do you find that you have to be a little more outgoing to connect with people who may not immediately connect with you?
That is true. But and the birds of the feather may apply to the children, too, that her best friend from her last school had a dad who was older than me, and I just always wondered if that was a coincidence or if that was something they had in common.
Interesting.
Because the first time he ever called about a play date, he said something about a class reunion, and I got off the phone and said to my wife, did I hear that the date wrong, or is this guy older than me?
Did that make you feel young?
It does make me feel young, and he is a very youthful person too, so that's encouraging to me as well.
Nice. So. Well, let's go back to the phones. Nathan is on the line in Moline. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your experience?
So, well, I married when I was 25 and had my first kid when I was 30, then had secondary infertility until I was 43, and then all of a sudden had three more kids. Just one right after the other. And for me, it was the biggest difference was between the first kid and the second three was my energy level. Yeah, I could do a lot more with my daughter than I could with the other kids just because I was a lot more worn out.
You were also outnumbered.
Yes. I have decided that once the kids start outnumbering the parents, then the parents are in trouble.
So, Nathan, in the longer term, has it created any other challenges?
Not really challenges, but it's been different. We have one set of friends who have preschoolers, and we have one set of friends who have teenagers. So it's been kind of, you know, a melding of two different worlds and kind of a challenge sometimes to we recently moved to Iowa, and so making friends here has been kind of interesting because, you know, one said, well, gosh, you've got preschoolers, and the other said, well, gosh, you've got teenagers, and kind of fitting in there was kind of odd. The really nice thing, though, is we have a built-in babysitter.
Right, which I'm sure a lot of oldest children are very familiar with that that position.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much for sharing that with us today. And he talks about having energy and having a little less energy a little later on. So what was it like when you brought home an infant and you were 48 years old? Now, of course, a lot of us have been through an infancy of a child, and it's exhausting no matter what your age. But did you feel like it was harder?
That I can't say. And in hindsight, I honestly think it may not have been because, first of all, it is amazing to witness the reserves of energy your body has and your mind has in a situation like that we're obviously programmed to be parents. And it's just amazing how much you can do with little sleep. But looking back, you know, having a new child in your house, having an infant, makes everybody 48 or 60 or whatever. you're not feeling young those 3 months.
Well, yeah, when you talked about your back aching, I thought, yeah, I threw my back out a couple of times too, and I was a little over a decade younger.
Yeah, I think the bigger challenges are now, where I still have plenty of energy, but now that I'm in the chauffeur period, I think that gets a little tiring, but I do well. I definitely probably have less energy than a 30-year-old chauffeur dad, but I do pretty well. You know, I thought of one other aspect that's interesting in this too, which is my daughter's cousins who are all in their 20s. and that's a different thing too, but that seems to work pretty well. And of course, her cousins are having children, so there are babies around, but it is interesting. The family structure is different.
Right. And how old is your daughter now?
My daughter's 13 now.
Okay. So she's kind of in between the two generations.
Mm-hmm.
And does she ever voice any thoughts about that?
Not really. She's thrilled to see her cousins is pretty much it. And we're very conscious. I mean, we have a lot of family we love, and it's great to see them. But we're very conscientious of making sure those bonds are strong and trying to see cousins and nieces as much as we can and nephews.
Now, after you adopted your daughter and you'd been a happy family for a number of years, both you and your wife did experience serious health crises. And of course, those can happen at any age. But your wife is a breast cancer survivor. You are a stroke survivor. How did that change your perspective?
Well, in some ways, because of the overthinking aspect of my personality, I had considered those possibilities that the actuarial table might not work to our favor as parents, but it definitely has impacted the way we look at life. I mean, just we're more careful about our health, and we were pretty good before that, but definitely sticking around is the biggest challenge of being the late starting parent, and I feel I'm obligated to do my best to succeed at that. I mean, I want to watch her grow up and become an adult and all those wonderful things, but I also want her to have me there when she needs me. So those were huge things.
And I think something every parent thinks about, but I'm sure that an older parent thinks about it more.
Exactly. And one of the positive things about older parents is you tend to be prepared for something like that. So, you know, as far as insurance and just safety mechanisms in place for if something did go wrong. Obviously when you're 25, you don't think you're going to have a stroke. So you don't prepare for,
right.
You're immortal at that stage when you're that age. And I don't tend to see myself that way anymore, but
you write about watching your wife go through sort of a metamorphosis when she became a mother. Your family also changed too. Your mother decided to move to be closer to you and closer to your daughter. Mm-hmm. And that's changed your entire family.
Yes, that's right. And that was just a huge bonus for my mom. Having a young granddaughter was just an amazing surprise to her too. It was something she didn't expect. And of course, there are great grandkids around too now, but that was very good for everyone. It worked out very well.
Now, you also asked the question when you looked at your wife and you saw what you described as the maternal glow, which I know is a little cliche, but I think we've all seen it too. Mm-hmm. You wondered to yourself, do men go through some sort of transformation? So what do you think?
I do think that. Yeah, I think we are programmed in a good way to respond properly to these things. So there was just some wonderful changes, just some real revelatory changes in my life at that point. And again, when I talk about our daughter making baby noises throughout the night, to just well, here I am, you know, this thing I always wondered about, and, you know, how would I be in this situation? And it's good.
Has your daughter read the book?
Actually, she has not. And I'm going to start reading the last third to her shortly, because I think that'll touch her. The first third might traumatize her about all the things we went through. So she might have to wait a while for that.
Right. Baby making is not something most kids want to think about with regards to their parents. Right?
Yes. And I thought about that plenty when this book was actually becoming a book. Where, oh. But I think she'll forgive me when she reads the last third of the book.
Right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Tom Lamar is the author of Geezer Dad, How I Survived Infertility Clinics, Fatherhood Jitters, Adoption Weight Limbo, and Things That Go Wah in the Night. He's also a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop. He lives in Colorado now. And coming up in a moment, I'm going to be joined by Thomas Schofield, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State. We're going to continue talking about older parents. So join us with your stories and your comments. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the trend of older parents in the United States. I mentioned earlier that in 1970, the average age of a new mom was 21.4 years. 2014, it was 26.3 years. And of course, dads are getting older too, and that's the average age. So there are people on both ends of the spectrum, of course. Joining me now is Thomas Schofield, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. And you are also welcome to join the conversation with your stories, your comments, your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Thomas Schofield, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, and let's talk about this trend. I just quoted some statistics from the CDC that in 1970, the average age of a mother was 21.4. In 2014, it was 26.3. And that's the first-time mother. How significant do you see this trend as, with parents choosing to wait longer?
Well, the significance of the trend is kind of hard to gauge because we don't yet know what the implications are. It's something that we're still studying. What the advent of all these new reproductive technologies and a more open and fostering attitude institutionally regarding adoption is allowing us is variation that didn't exist before in our culture. And so we're able to look and see, you know, instead of hypothetically asking, what if it was a 60-year-old having a child, we get to just follow 60-year-olds who have children, and we get to study the well-being of the parents and the well-being of the child. And based on the priorities of the researchers, there's both those lines of research actively happening right now.
And because the trend is large enough, you can find a group of parents in this age group to follow, as opposed to just picking up on anecdotal stories.
Exactly. Just like back in the 70s, you know, in the time of Kramer versus Kramer, when that movie came out, it was so rare for fathers to get custody that the initial studies of growing up with a father but not your mother were a little bit hard to interpret because it was just such a rare phenomena. The same issues emerged with the study of gay and lesbian parents. The first studies, it was just so socially non-normative that it was really tricky to know exactly who are we studying here. But as more and more people shift to these alternative choices in terms of family formation and timing of parenthood, then, yeah, it gives us a much more kind of a representative population to work with.
And is some of that research coming to fruition already, or are we still sort of in the gathering stages?
We know some. There's more that we have yet to learn, certainly, but we do know some things. We know, for instance, that parent satisfaction, most of the studies on parent age, the age of parents when they decide to have have their first child is based really, when you look at those studies, it's based on early parenthood, like teens and the early 20s, versus any time later than 25. And so the interesting stuff, the basis of Tom Lamar's book, which is really a fascinating conversation. I appreciated being able to hear that. That kind of shift in parenting age, where it's not did you have a parent as a teen or a real early child, you know, sorry,
a child,
real
a teenager,
early adult,
right?
Yes, a real early in adulthood, when you know the pluses of having a child then are that you're. You know, your identity is still being formed. And so having a child, you know, there's not much role conflict. What ends up happening oftentimes, and on the average at least, is that having a life fits in around being a parent, for better or worse. The downside is, of course, that the parents, you know, we're all exhausted and we don't know who we are yet, but we're trying to raise a little one. And so there's that. That is a basis. Sorry, that's the basis of a lot of the research out there. But we've learned that okay. So here's what we see in those really early parents. The interesting emerging dynamic of people who are deliberately waiting until they're you know north of 40 to become first time parents is an interesting but different dynamic. We see that parents are less stressed. The advantages for them. Are that they're able to do things more on their terms. They've fully formed their own identity at that point, which gives them a leg up over younger parents. And socioeconomically, they tend to be much more stable. So that leads to relatively less parenting stress. That said, they also do have tend to have more role conflict because you know by the time you're 40, you've kind of got routines and you know what you like and. You know how you like your
plus
breakfast.
Plus, you have a career that's fully formed as well.
That's right. And so your child, in the aggregate, I know there's a zillion exceptions, but as a scientist, I study the averages, not the individual differences as much. What we see is that there is a little more role conflict. Your child ends up fitting a little more around your life than is the case if you have a child early on.
I want to go to the phones. I'm talking with Thomas Schofield, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. We'd love to hear your experiences, your thoughts on this as well as we talk about older parents this hour. And Joan is on the line in Ames. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Hi. And you were a child of older parents, right?
Right. My parents married at an older age and then had seven. I was born at when my mother was 38 and my father was 42. And I and my older brothers thought we had a great childhood, but my younger sisters and brother, not so much. I remember as a teen being rather anxious about the health of my father, who I perceived as being quite a bit older. And fortunately, he stayed healthy. I was very lucky that way. We had my parents for many more years. But my youngest brother was still in high school when my parents retired and moved to Florida. And he felt abandoned. They'd been talking about it for a long time, but, you know, people, kids that age are oblivious to what's going on around them outside of their own world. My younger sister was still in college, and she was pretty traumatized by it as well, by the changes at home, even though one of her older brothers was still living on the farm. So the farm was still there, the home was still there, but...
the parents were not.
Left. And this is, you know, an issue I brought up with my patients when I became an obstetrician that, you know, retirement and higher education are going to hit at the same time. and of course, there's always the issue if you delay that not... most women can't get pregnant in their 40s, unfortunately. Well, or maybe fortunately, actually. there may be some logic behind that.
Well, interesting. So, Joan, as a doctor, but also based from your own personal experiences, you urged people to conceive earlier.
If they had a choice, you know, earlier, physically, the earliest is the best, as far as maturity, older has advantages. So I used to tell people I think the ideal age is 25 to 35. My mother didn't recommend having children older to her daughters, and we did have our children a little bit younger than hers. But
well, Joan, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, Thomas, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line earlier who said, I had kids a little bit later. I think I was more patient and ready to be a parent at that age. So I think that resonates with some of what Joan was saying there as far as finding a middle ground. And we have this email from Jan in Mason City. She says, I'm a geezer mom. My youngest child, our third, was born when I was 46 and married. She's now 19. Her next older sibling is 34, and her sister is 43. I'm now 65 and single. And one of her challenges that she talks about is she says, I'm also the sole caretaker for my 91-year-old mother. I imagine I'm an outlier, she says. However, when I was pregnant, I lived in Chicago and went to a clinic that served older mothers, and I was nowhere near the oldest one. But that can be a real challenge when we talk about the sandwich generation, where you're responsible for your parents and you're responsible for your children, and waiting later to have children kind of accentuates that, makes it an even bigger issue, doesn't it?
Well, without question. The email you just referenced, as well as Joan's comments and the earlier caller, PJ, earlier on in the show, they all fall into a similar vein. Which is consistent with some research that was done by Andrew Yarrow, who asked the children of these of older parents, what was it like? How did it affect you, your parents being a little older than average? And he found that there were some positives. Of course, children were quick to praise their parents and say, you know, my parents were a lot, they seemed to be a lot more available to talk to me when I needed to be talked to. So they had those positive experiences. They also discussed, though, greater worry about illnesses, feeling isolated, because so many of their peers' parents were younger, having to grow up a little faster because they were often around their parents' older friends, and having to assume responsibility for their parents right as they were hitting their 20s when they didn't really feel quite ready.
Let's go to the phones. Ruth is on the line in Baldwin. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I am so excited. I have the best story.
Okay.
I was married young, had my first child at 16, had three more, so that's four. My husband divorced me after 20 years. Well, I had had my tubes tied, or I can't think of the terminology. But anyway, then I met my soulmate, who I'm with now. He had not been married. He is 7 years younger than me, didn't have any children, hadn't been married. So we went to the University of Iowa, had my tubes reversed. Within a year and 3 months, I had a little baby boy who's going to be 31, has his own family now. So I was a grandma 3 years before I had my son. I don't know if I said my mother passed away having me at 40, so that was a bit of a trauma. But everyone accepted it. I was, you know, young at the time. I've since worked with at-risk kids and retired a few years ago, but it's been the most wonderful blessing. I was lucky to have a husband that helped. He could do everything I did. He put his life on hold, changed jobs, and we farmed and he stayed home. And I don't know. There's so much I have to say about the blessing. There is a downside. I'm 71 now, but a young 71. But I think all five of my kids will be equally devastated when I go. My My husband has one son, one child, whom he adores. So as older parents, there is a downside. But the blessings and the warmth, the love that's been given us, we'll just take a day at a time.
Well, and Ruth, you had the experience of being one of those young mothers who had all the energy in the world, I would guess, and could cope with the lack of sleep beautifully, and also being a mother at 40. So if you had to, I mean, I understand that there are many differences in the relationships that you were in at the time, but to compare for us a little bit, what were some of the pros and cons when you were a mom at 40 as opposed to a mom in your early 20s, being a young adult?
Well, that's pretty easy. I remember hearing when I was in the hospital with a long labor, with the first one, of course, being young, a nurse said, "Oh, there's a baby having a baby." Okay, so I've never forgotten that. And there was no money. There was, you know, being young parents, we really had a rough time. No extra car, no money. But we did a wonderful job. We've got a fabulous, you know, four adult kids. I have 12 grandchildren, eight greats. They're all great. But having the baby at 40, so much easier. I had two miscarriages before, you know, just before I had Casey, but not counting that, everything was so much easier at 40. I can't tell you.
Oh, Ruth, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
I had so much to say. I hope I got it all in. All right. I love your show, Charity.
Oh, thanks.
My husband's on the road, and he called and made sure I listened.
Oh, good. Thanks a lot for your call. And I want to read this email and then get some thoughts from you, Thomas. This one is from Hans in Coralville. He says, "I was listening to your show, and a couple of things stood out to me. I had my first child at 39 and my second at 41. Your previous guest mentioned wanting to be there for his children when they were older and when they needed him. And I wanted to say that I really felt that change when my first daughter was born. I want to see as much as I can of their lives. Also, my children and two stepchildren did disrupt my life a lot. I suddenly had a reason I needed to be home at the end of the day, so I couldn't stay late at work, and I gave up most of my personal time. However, being a dad has become my favorite pastime by far. I almost missed out on it, and I'm really glad I didn't." And Tom, that relates to something you were mentioning earlier, that sense of satisfaction that researchers are finding with older parents, that they are at a point in their lives where they can really appreciate this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. The younger parents, they do the best they can, but they're just so busy trying to get from point A to point B in terms of raising a child that savoring the journey is something that more often is done in hindsight.
And do you see this and do researchers see this as a trend that's going to continue to grow?
Well, the interesting thing is the trend seems to be continuing. If research were to emerge that suggested, you know, it's in the best interest of children or of parents to reconsider things, then I suppose that we may see a shift demographically in that. But no, I don't think so. I think it will continue.
All right. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
Thomas Schofield, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. And thank you to everyone who shared their stories this hour as we've been talking about older parents. Talk of Iowa is produced at Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @IPRTalk. You can also follow me @Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.